Don, before we start talking about the Do It exhibition at Kalamazoo Institute of Arts, let's hear a little bit about your own background.
Well, I came out of a studio art, a studio program. I was a sculptor. I have an MFA in sculpture. Pretty much right after I graduated, I was not confident in the kind of work I was doing. Didn't know if my voice as a visual artist was actually going to come through the way I wanted it to.
You know, all artists go through that.
I know. In this case, I decided that I should leave the studio.
Wow.
Which was traumatic, but also opened up the world that I stayed in from 1986 until now. I knew that I had a good eye, and I was interested in contemporary art, so I started to curate exhibitions, and then was hired at a university. Cleveland State University hired me first, and then I went to Tyler School of Art at Temple University. And then my wife and I came to Michigan, and I worked for the KIA for about 3 years, and then the Richmond Center.
Yeah, right here on Western's campus.
I knew it was being constructed, and I had some conversations with the School of Art and thought it might be a good opportunity to come back to the university, which I loved working. And so I applied for the job, and so I opened the Richmond Center in 2006.
Yeah.
And then did it until 2016. I retired in 2016.
Long time.
Yeah.
Retired. But like many retirees, you're busy.
I am. I've done Art Prize over the last
four years,
which has been a really fun thing to do.
What exactly did you do for Art Prize?
There was a venue that Western actually had up there on Wealthy Street. And there was a space that was really used for nothing but storage most of the year.
And those can be wonderful for
art. Yeah, it was just great to use. So we would clear it out and put a show up, one of the 150 venues or so. But amazing numbers of people went through. I was able to meet artists that I hadn't met before. Art Prize actually sent me to Bentonville, Arkansas to interview artists, and we actually picked one in 2017 that came very close to winning a grand prize. She actually won two of the individual awards.
That's gratifying.
Yeah, it was a great piece.
Yeah. So now KIA has pulled you back.
They have. About a year ago, they asked me to come back and do some research for their permanent collection, that was great. I was enjoying not being sort of front and center anymore. And so just doing research for them was great. So I did that for about 4 months. And then there was an opportunity. They're actually in the process of searching for a new chief curator for the Institute. And so I am filling in while they are doing the interview process. So I did a show that opened a few months ago called Global Glass. That was out of a collection from the University of Michigan, actually. And I'm going to open another show in January on a painting show of the mid-20th century.
But right now, you're kind of in the middle of an exhibition that started in October, but is running through March 3rd, yes?
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
And it's kind of a scary one. Do It.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, it's not a scary exhibition for anyone to come in and see.
But for a curator.
or participate in. But for a curator, I am one where I've usually planned 18 to 24 months ahead for all the shows that I were doing. And I had the writing done, pretty much knew exactly where things were going to go in the different spaces that I was in charge of. And this is the opposite. Hans Obrist is a very, very well-known curator and has written extensively about the process of curating exhibitions and the responsibilities of museums in showing culture. And he met with a few artists in the early 90s, and they talked about an idea of conceptual artists, and the conceptual movement came out of the late 60s, early 70s. And it basically is the idea is the artwork. So they decided they wanted to put this exhibition together that would travel for a while. And It is a book of instructions from different artists and curators and art historians.
Yeah, it's sitting right here, this neon orange, very thick book.
Yeah, there's a right now, I think there's about 400 instructions in that book. So the instructions for those who take on the exhibition is that you have to pick at least 20 instructions.
Okay.
And we picked 31, actually. We ended up with 31.
Okay.
And you give them to your community in some way. So as curator, instead of looking at individual works of art and deciding on a thematic approach for it, I was just talking to members of the community, and I brought in some artists, I brought in some other cultural organizations.
So you just kind of opened it up to the local artists and maybe picked some, and some picked you?
Some of the instructions I thought fit organizations the best, so I proposed those. But there were some artists who actually looked at a number of different ones and then decided to pick the one that they did. Okay. So the scary part comes back to a week before the show opened, we had no idea what we were going to get.
You can't be a control freak.
I know.
Yeah. And curating, people probably don't realize when they go to an art institute, a museum, an art gallery, how much work goes on behind the scenes before you see what you see. But this, yeah, one of the names I saw associated with art show is Yoko Ono. And I think once you hear that, you already know that you're going to be out of the box.
Actually, that piece has ended up being one of the most popular in the show. So there's a lot of different ways in which the audience partakes this show. There's a piece by Adrian Piper that is at the entrance of the galleries that says, in order to enter, you have to start humming a song. And so people, you can hear people doing that.
Oh, fun.
Then there are just some of the artworks that are just vinyl text that tell a certain command. And so you're just basically reading those. Then there are others that we passed out to people in the region. But Yoko Ono's was a specific work called The Wish Tree. Yeah, and it's a work that she's been doing for a long time.
A live tree, a sculpted tree?
It is a live tree. One of her instructions was it should be something that is native to
the area.
The area.
I see.
And so we have, I think it's called a northern maple that we brought into the galleries. It's very much alive. We're hoping to keep it alive until
we get it back
out in the spring.
Yeah.
And then we made up these tags, pieces of paper, and there's a place to sit, and you are to make a wish. And that
wrap it around
anything.
A branch?
And then you tie it onto the tree.
Okay. Yeah.
The tree's already amazingly full.
Yeah.
It has really been the most popular piece, I think, in the whole show. And it's nice. I haven't read any, and I'm probably won't read any, maybe until the end of the exhibition when we pack up things.
Have any of the wishes traveled along, or this is specifically for this area?
It's specifically for us, but at the end of the show, we send all of the wishes back to Yoko Ono, and she's been collecting them, I think, since 1991, and it may be even before that. So she has thousands of wishes that she has now collected, and
there's probably some other art concept at the end of this.
Yeah,
we'll see what she
else
does.
Will happen, right?
Yeah. Well, I read somewhere that it started in Paris in 1993, that it's the longest running exhibition.
It is. So I've done shows where one that I did for the Richmond Center here traveled for 3 years, and I was so pleased that it was able to go to 5 different institutions during that time. And that's probably a good run for an exhibition. There are some museum shows that may go 5 years or so.
Yeah.
Because you're borrowing works from collectors, and they don't want things to be gone forever.
Sure, yeah.
So it's hard to keep a show together in this case because it's just ideas. This show has traveled now for over 25 years.
That's amazing. And is this the last stop?
It is the last stop in this configuration. They've decided that they're going to readapt the idea for this show for children's museums. And I think
it's
it will fit very well. And actually, our docent program where we bring schools through at the KIA, the kids have just
Oh, I would think it's
crazy
just
for this show.
Made for kids, yeah. Yeah. And yeah. The kids in us big people, too.
Yes, of course. Yeah, they are they're just, I mean, it's so great to see the groups in there. And there's a history of telling people not to touch in a museum. And in this case, we want them to touch, pick up, take things.
Yeah, and hum.
Yeah.
Give some limelight to some of the organizations and local artists that we may know and love who are involved in this.
A faculty member here, Karen Bondarchuk, did a piece that was taken off of a David Lynch instruction, the filmmaker and visual artist. It's a beautiful, beautiful painting, actually. There are organizations that I was very pleased we were able to work with. One of the instructions is from one of my three mentors that I've had in life, Lucy Lepard, who is a writer, activist, art historian, curator, really came to the forefront during the feminist movement and wrote the first book on multiculturalism. But she had an instruction that I went to Wellspring, the Wellspring Dance, Corey Terry, and they came up with a really beautiful, they did a video of a piece that they danced that was taken from the instructions of Lucy Lepard.
Oh, wonderful.
And then there was another one where you were to come up with five books that had never been written. And so I thought, well, book arts is the perfect place for that. And they came up with really a great idea where they made books, they made covers, titled the books, and then made the books that are empty. And you can come into the gallery and you can write the book. You can write in the book and make the story your own, which I thought was a really great thing to do. So those organizations just came really through in a beautiful way.
Sounds like an amazingly fun exhibition for families.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there are times where you might be puzzled, but I think that's part of it. There's a piece by Felix Gonzalez Torres who has been doing works kind of like this for a long time. But he put 180 pounds of candy in a corner. And that was the instruction. That's all there was. Now, what do you as the viewer do with that?
Yeah.
And I don't want to elaborate anymore, but you can take that in any number of ways.
So okay.
It's interesting to see what the
How
public
people
is
respond.
Doing.
They're
very puzzled by it, and some relate to it a little more than others.
No mice problems at the Institute?
No.
Yeah, well, let's keep it that way. Well, this is really fun. Any special hours or admission or?
Members. There's a membership to the KIA. And also, you can take tours. You can get with the education department. Michelle Stempian is in charge of the education program there. So you can have docents take groups through, and they don't just do schools. They do any number of group activities they will help with. And or you can come in and there's a feed in a museum you can pay, and you can not only see this show, but there's other shows going on at the same time, and also including the permanent collection is up in the lower level at all times. So
plan for a day almost.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's so nice to be back there. I loved working at the Richmond Center, but I love being around that permanent collection. And I will just take a break from my office work and go down and stay with a work of art for a while. It's really great.
So much for retirement, Don.
Yes.
Well, thank you for coming in and telling us about this really fun exhibit, Do It. So do it and go.
Absolutely.